From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of September, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com in Atchison, Kansas. And we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like, or search out the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, which we've recorded and you'll hear this afternoon on our home station, many of these stations over the weekend, and up online right now at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled at $6.76¾. It was 11½ cents lower for Friday. The March at $6.81¾, down 11½ as well. And the May corn, 12 cents lower at $6.82¼. November beans, $14.25¾, down 31¼. January, 31½ lower at $14.31¾. And the March soybeans, 30½ cents lower at $14.34½. The bean meal, down $6. The bean oil, $2.43 lower. And the wheat futures in the soft red, 30¼ cents lower at $8.80½. The hard red at $9.50½ a bushel, down 29 cents. Live cattle futures at $148.55 for 100 pounds, 80 cents lower. Feeders were up 20 cents at $178.25, and lean hogs at $82.80 were down $2.87½. The crude oil at $78.66 a barrel, down $4.86. Diesel fuel is off 16¾ at $3.15⅔ of a cent per gallon. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.30⅞ is 12¾ of a cent lower. The natural gas at 19¾ of a cent lower at $7 even for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average below 30,000 at 29,401, off 750 points or thereabouts, and the S&P 500 down about 100 points at this time at 3,671.5 points. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Mike Zuzulo is here on this Friday afternoon to explain to us what happened in Chicago and New York and the rest of the planet as well. There's an awful lot going on this week, Mike. Where do you want to start today?
Well, I think probably the best way for perspective to start is where we closed for the week, and we're just finishing up here as we go on to our conversation today, and it looks like the corn's going to lose a couple cents on the week after being up pretty nicely. Beans are going to come in the biggest leader to the downside, losing about around 20 plus cents in the front end contract, Todd. And then the wheat, it closed last week in soft red at 8.59¾. It looks like we're going to stay above that by about 20 cents plus or minus. And I think that makes sense. And maybe that's where I would begin with this week's close, is that the trade started with needing to put more risk premium back in because of what Russia was doing, their first mobilization since World War II, 300,000 troops. Some European news sources that I look at are saying he's going to ramp it up to 1 million troops here in the coming weeks. And those 300,000 just came out today that they're going to get about 2 weeks of training, and then they're going to be heading to Ukraine and going to those areas that are voting in the referendum right now. So I think the trade's kind of doing what it did last time in terms of taking too much risk premium out of the wheat market quickly because of the Federal Reserve this time around, but also because we didn't get any new news on Vladimir Putin. And I think we just got to get to the point where the trade's going to have to realize that not only do we have a drought in Southern Plains and a drought in Argentina, and we've got funds that are net short in the wheat market and unlikely to get more net short, but this guy is outright ready to go after land, and he's after conquest, and I think the wheat premium needs to be adjusted for that.
Is that because wheat from Russia will be off the market, wheat from Ukraine will be off the market, or both?
Yeah, that's an excellent follow-up question, because it would suggest historically that if we do see him move that many troops into Ukraine, then NATO will probably get involved. And even if they don't, I think you have Russia hold on to a lot of their wheat It'd be very hard for them to move wheat out of the Black Sea under that kind of advancement and raising the stakes in the war, because I think they'd have more drone strikes and more issues that the Russian ships would have to come under. And I think that Turkey probably would no longer be on their side as much as they are right now. And so from a variety of reasons, I think the supply-demand fundamentals would change. And even if I'm wrong about that, I'm skeptical about the 99 million tons of Russian production, especially given that their exports year to date right now are still down 20% from last year at this time. So something's wrong with this picture in terms of supply demand. And then you throw on top of that his moves in Russia to go Ukraine even harder. And I sit here and I think we took $5 out of the price of wheat. Was that really the smartest thing to do?
So we may have a rally in wheat. If we have a rally in wheat, does that mean corn and soybeans follow?
It supports them. I'm not sure that we can get to a level of the old high. You know, we continue, in my opinion, to want to watch that 695 Dees corn and 1495 Nov beans as a close above those levels should uncover buy stops. That should give us a better chance to be able to get up towards those old highs. But yeah, you hit it on this from a point of the Dow Jones futures making new 2022 lows, which also takes you down to the lowest level since early 2021. And the Federal Reserve and what they did in terms of just ripping the Band-Aid off of the wound and saying recession is essentially coming now and the trade having to react to that. I think wheat's our best hope as far as in this seasonal decline time period with pretty good early yields being reported of the corn and beans being there.
Yeah, so as I mentioned when we were talking before we began to record that the Dow is below 30,000. Of course, that's just an arbitrary number, but it means something to people when you pass a 10. And crude oil below $80 a barrel also meaning something. And also, I suppose that means that there should be some purchases by the United States to refill the strategic reserve, I suppose. And then you discuss the 3/4 point raise in the interest rate that the Fed put in place this week. How should farmers put it all back together for marketing this year's crop and potentially next year's?
You know, I'm of the view that the puts are still the best thing to use right now, given all that we're with and the true history that we're making. I mean, the British pound hit a 37-year low against the U.S. dollar. And you know, Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, in his 42-minute long press conference used the word restrictive 13 times. And I can replace restrictive with recession. And I think the trade is starting to get underneath that idea as well. And so I think given a recession, deflationary pressure from the outside because of the monetary policy around the world, but then given what is happening with Vladimir Putin and the tight supplies we have and the weather markets that we still have, I think the puts are the best way to go at this point, Todd, generally speaking.
I have a different view on that I'll ask about. So what if he used that purposely to keep the American public from deciding that inflation was just going to be a given and feel more like there was going to be a recession coming in hopes that it would moderate both?
I would go into that if they had not taken their growth number from 1.7% down to plus 2.2% in just the last 3 months. And I think the other thing we forget, I believe, is that Jerome Powell is the same Fed chairman almost literally a year ago in August of 2020 who redefined their model of inflation and said it was going to be more of a general level of inflation. And that told the market he was going to let inflation run. And now he's going 180 degrees opposite that. I truly think that we're at a stage here where the boat's kind of losing its rudder at this point because the monetary policy is about demand and the inflation that we have is about supply.
Hey, thank you very much. Anything else to add before I let you go?
That should do it. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. Mike Suslo is with GlobalComResearch.com. He is in Atchison, Kansas. A couple of things about next week. We'll start our fall fund drive here at Illinois Public Media. You are the public and you drive part of what's on the air, including the agricultural programming. I'll be asking those of you who listen to it intently to dig deep into your back pockets and make a charitable gift to Illinois Public Media. Now, you can get a head start on that by going to willgive.org right now. The other thing is that Thursday of next week, I'll be hosting the fourth in the series of six FarmDoc Fall webinars. This time around, we'll take up the Inflation Reduction Act. It does have an impact on agriculture, as it's related to conservation programs, energy programs, and farm debt relief. There's a lot of cost share money that will be available, and it may have an impact on the expiration of the current farm bill. That one's due in 2023. You'll want to learn more about that, and you can do that easily enough. Go to our website, willag.org. You'll find the FarmDoc Daily Webinar Series there. Get yourself registered now. It's free. It's online. And you can listen to it in the tractor or combine cab. Snodgrass is here on this Friday afternoon to help us take a look at the weather forecast. He's with Nutrien and Agrible. Thank you so much for being with us. I think maybe we ought to start by looking back over this past week, because first, we changed officially. I know you meteorologists say September 1, but we changed officially yesterday to fall, and, we felt like it. Also, there were some rains, I think, across portions of the United States that are worth discussing.
Yeah, I mean, if we start west, there was quite a bit of heavy rainfall in Northern California, a place that's in exceptional drought and was having its driest year on record. That was a big cutoff low that just sat over there. And this morning it was in Montana, and it's going to be the thing that sweeps through us tonight and tomorrow and even a little bit into Sunday morning. That's going to be bringing in another quick shot at some cooler air later, and then also a chance for rainfall. But in between, temperatures do make a quick rebound, so that'll be nice. But more on those rains, Kansas is the area that I'm really watching carefully. So they're trying to get a winter wheat crop established and get it going. And the rains that came through Kansas this week were just, I mean, is exactly what they needed, because they are exceptionally dry. They had 100 degree heat earlier in the week. Then the rains came through and really kind of just put down exactly what they needed. So that's, overall, that's a good thing. But the other part of this story from this last week was frost. We had a frost that hit northern Montana, came into parts of North Dakota. I think it spared the Red River Valley of the North, but this morning it was in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin and the UP of Michigan. So that'd be a late frost for them. They can normally get frosts closer to mid-month, and here we are, going after the last week of the month, and the frost has just touched a few areas there. So we bought time at the end of the season for a lot of folks with more favorable weather, and harvest doesn't look too bad either.
Hey, I was wanting to discuss hurricanes as well. The National Oceanic Atmospheric Association, is that correct?
Administration.
Thank yeah. you. I knew I got the last one wrong. NOAA, how about that?
NOAA
told us this is going to be a very, very active season. Early in the year, it hadn't been, but hurricanes have begun to tick off now.
Yeah, it's always it's hard to predict a season. And I was right there with NOAA saying, hey, we have a much better chance of being above normal than below. But we do now have a few systems named. We've made it through letter G. There's Gaston that's out in the open Atlantic. And then we have Fiona, which just missed Bermuda yet. Well, didn't miss Bermuda. The eye missed Bermuda, the right-hand side smacked Bermuda. That was the same one that knocked power out for the entire island of Puerto Rico earlier this week. All right, so Fiona's going to go into the Canadian Maritimes. In fact, we've got high wind warnings out for Maine, but Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, eastern Quebec could be seeing hurricane-force winds out of what's left for Fiona. Now, it's what's behind it that I hate to say it. We had an active Cat 4 hurricane going, but everybody was watching the thing that was following it, which is now in the middle of the Caribbean, and last night really took on some deep convection and looked really healthy. So it got upgraded to become Tropical Depression number 9. And that could end up getting the name Hermine. It is Hermine, not what I've already heard people calling it Hermione. That's a character from Harry Potter. This is a hurricane named Hermine. And it might go over Cuba and hit Florida next week. But the question is, does it roll up the East Coast? Now, at this point, though, you've noticed I haven't talked anything about the Midwest, because these next two systems are far from it. And in fact, as I mentioned a moment ago, we're going to have drier conditions. We're not looking at a frost anytime soon. And we're probably going to see long lines at the elevators while folks are just getting everything out of the fields quickly, as this dry down's been pretty good for us.
Oh, man, I was hoping for maybe a Hades or a Hercules, something else that I saw in Disney since we had Gaston and Fiona.
Gaston's got to be the best name for a hurricane, right? I mean, just because of the Disney reference.
Yeah, so be our guest, be our guest.
Oh, goodness.
How about October as an outlook?
You know, the models right now are trying to paint the front half of October really favorably. But I've seen some activity in the Pacific jet stream that's been spurred along by this late resurgence of La Nina that suggests that the jet stream could get extended. And all that that means is, instead of just kind of hitting the Gulf of Alaska and slowing down and splitting, it just carries this momentum into the U.S. So what that means is we'll probably see a lot of wet weather in the Northwest. And if it's wet there, that tends to make the winter, or not winter, the fall low pressure system track a bit more active. So I guess my point in telling you all that is, if you have an opportunity to get the crop out early and the moisture's right, I'd burn the midnight oil to get it out, just for concern about some issues going on maybe later in the month of October.
What does South America look like?
Well, South America is getting almost exactly what you'd expect with a La Nina, and that is the northern growing areas, you know, from Mato Grosso east, are wet right now. The monsoon has started, the moisture's in place. They're gonna go very aggressive in the month of October on getting this crop planted. The drought issues are south, far southern Brazil, Uruguay, along the Paraná River in Argentina. And Argentina is also quite cold right now, as is southern Brazil. So it's kind of like how we felt last April, right? It was just so cold, we couldn't get the crop going early. They're kind of feeling that down there right now. And we're seeing, overall drier forecast for the start of their growing season south, but expect fast planting progress across Brazil's northern growing areas.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
That is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You can find us online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.